buckle your seatbelts today, folks, because our sin that is socially acceptable is one that may be at times a little uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, and if you have kids in the car, you might want to not listen to this one.
Just listen to it later.
I mean, listen to it later. Save it. Might be a more mature themed podcast
you
today.
Save it for 5 years from now, and then you're going to sit down and remember. Put a reminder in your phone.
So today, we're talking about the socially acceptable sin in today's culture. Of lust.
Yes.
It seems to me, Ben, I don't know about you, maybe I'm just getting older. I said getting older, not getting old.
Yeah, good way to go, Dan.
But does it seem to you like today's generation? Now, I grew up in the 60s and 70s when the miniskirt and go-go boots and
the sexual revolution
and hip hugger pants. Yeah. What was the thing? But it seems like we have gone way past where we were then.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, we don't want to go back and sound like old fuddy-duddies. We're like, you and I are not trying to be the old curmudgeons on the Muppet Show right now, even though I know you love those guys.
I do.
But there is something about us looking back and saying what used to be something like you and I grew up with porn. If you want to get a hold of your pornography, you would have to go to a certain part of town.
It was 7-Eleven. It was behind the counter.
Yeah, there were all kinds of barriers to people gaining access. That people would still do it, but it was hard to get. Now
it comes to you.
You have to be aware, especially with our smartphones and computers and cable and streaming and all that kind of stuff.
Our attitude toward lust has changed.
I think that's what we're trying to say.
And it's changed in a weird way because part of when I was growing up, I mean, I heard sermons that were very authoritarian in their delivery, you know, rail against immodest dress for women.
Right.
Short skirts,
I don't think I don't think it's bad to preach about modesty because modesty is in the Bible, right?
It is. And I frankly think our political correctness and our over response in some cases to the Me Too movement it's made me nervous about addressing it because in the day of the internet, you know, one blogger, one TikToker can take a sentence you've said out of context and make you sound like you're some kind of Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Which I will tell you, when we picked this topic, I immediately broke out in a cold sweat because there are points I think need to be made, and yet I don't want to make them poorly.
Correct. Yeah.
So,
but I think what we're all trying to say is today, what the Bible calls lust, which is looking, you know, we all know what sexual immorality is, right? Mm-hmm. But now Jesus defined sexual immorality as even going into your thought life, what you see, right? He talks about this in Matthew chapter 5, that you've heard that it was said, if anyone sleeps with a man's wife, that you commit adultery. But I tell you, if you look upon a woman with lustful intention in your heart, you have committed adultery. So the whole idea, he brings the spirit of the law. We all know the sixth commandment of, you know, don't commit adultery. I'm sorry, seventh commandment, do not commit adultery. But he's saying, no, it's not just enough that you don't touch another woman. It's about you looking and the desire or the covetousness of your heart to want that all of a sudden that's sin. And what traditionally and culturally for eons has been, okay, that's bad, now is socially acceptable. That's what we're saying, is that because of the advent of porn and just so prevalent, it's just like, just everyday, ordinary thing that guys and even now girls do.
Yeah.
So
well, and here's what I'd like to do because I get to guide this conversation.
Yes, so, you do.
You get to guide the next one. But on this conversation, what I want to do, I want us to look at it bilaterally.
Okay.
I want to look at it as how do people who struggle with lust in their heart address this sin that is almost like, particularly if, I mean, you and I both, we've been in locker rooms, we've been with guys, and it's like, you know, the hubba hubba, you know, all the nonsense that dudes do, and then deny it whenever they get confronted about it later. I want us to deal with that, but I also want us to go to the other half and ask about our responsibility for provoking the potential for lustful thoughts in the lives of others, which is something that, again, we don't address often because I think our culture has almost overreacted to some abuses, you know, but particularly by men in terms of saying that I have no responsibility for this. Yes, right, you do have responsibility for your own thoughts.
Yes.
But I think in Scripture, we also see a joint accountability that not only will I not lust, I will not provoke lust. Not will I not only be angry, but I won't provoke anger.
This isn't just a male issue.
Right. One of the things we have to realize is that today females are accessing pornography at about a 30% rate by some standards, by some estimates.
And it's increasing. What we're seeing is it's being exposed to younger people at younger ages. It's being consumed by all gender. You know, it's increasing usage across the board.
Across the board, you've got same-sex attraction. You've got all kinds of things going on. So, and by the way, I guess at this point, it's proper for me to introduce ourselves. My name is Dan, and you're Ben. We're the teaching pastors at Life Fellowship, and this is Life Talks.
Yes.
And it's been a while since you've been here, Ben.
I know. I was supposed to be here last week, and I got sick. I mean, the week of Easter, and I came down with some nasty virus, and I'm like, please, Lord God, save me. and it was only like a 36-hour virus. I don't think it disrupted anything, but... Yeah, I missed out on podcast recording last week.
You were missed.
You were able to preach amazingly for Easter Sunday. That was more important.
Glory to God. All right.
So when we're talking about, let's talk about the issue of what can individuals do who say, you know what, I've just got a dirty mind. I've got an imagination that lends itself toward, you know, sexual lust. If I see a billboard, if I see a commercial, if I see an attractive person, then all of a sudden I lose control of my thoughts. What do you say to somebody like that? Because they are out there.
I agree. And I think what you've got to do is get away from the comparison. Everyone that has, and again, full disclosure, I've talked about this multiple times. I used to have a major issue with pornography in my life when I was younger, and I had to confront it. It was hard. It was difficult. It took years to really overcome it. But one of the things that keeps you stuck in it and unable to get out of it is what you do is you compare your usage to other people. Mm-hmm. And when you compare and say, well, I'm not as bad as that guy, or I don't look at that stuff, and there's just... You can make yourself feel really, you can justify your own behavior and thinking, well, it's really not that bad, right? And so, and again, this is where my definition of pornography is much broader. It's not just I'm looking at a naked body. I'm looking at anyone, whether they're clothed or how little or how much clothed they are, and looking at them lustfully. That's Jesus's standard. Mm-hmm. You can look at someone lustfully and then be fully clothed, okay? Mm-hmm. The other one issue is, how am I comparing this to other people? And typically, I mean, one of the things that I've seen in my counseling with guys with this is that there's always a cycle, and the cycle goes anywhere from 1 hour to 1 day to 1 week to 1 month, whatever it is. Some cycles for guys is like, I look twice a week. Some guys it's like, I look once a week. Some guys I look once a day, whatever it is. But there is a cycle. And what typically happens in the whole comparison thing is if you hear someone, well, I look at porn every day. Well, I don't look at it every day. Mm-hmm. You tend to minimize the real struggle that you have. And we have to remember, what is God's righteous standard? I love what it says in Ephesians 5:3, that there should not even be a hint of sexual immorality mentioned with us. So God's standard is holiness. That means, all guys struggle with this, or all people have some, that's not an excuse.
Yep. And that's how we end up making it socially acceptable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everybody does it.
Everybody does it.
It's everywhere you turn.
Right. And that's the problem is we have adopted man's standard as opposed to God's standard. And a lot of times, this is the way most people feel. Well, if that's God's standard, that feels impossible. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you, it's not. And it comes down to you desiring God more than you desire this sin. That's why so many times when it talks about sexual morality, especially in the New Testament, Paul does this all the time. He refers, always makes the connection between sexual morality and idolatry. Now you might be thinking, that is a weird connection, because when we think of idolatry, we're thinking of someone, you know, bowing down to a statue somewhere. The whole idea is an idol is anything that you're saying, this is a substitute for God. And we all know that there's something about the sexual experience that's pleasurable. That's good. God created sex to be beautiful and good, to be enjoyed between one man and one woman and under a covenant of marriage. But the problem is that when you go outside those bounds and just live for the pleasure, that can become a god to you. That can become something that where you're pursuing just, I want more and more and more, and it becomes this perversion in your life of taking over, and all of a sudden it becomes the god because it's dictating to you where you go, what you look. It dictates to you your time schedule. I mean, everything. It becomes just like Lord over your life. That's why Paul calls it idolatry, because it acts as a god over you. And so it first requires people to take it seriously enough to say, I've got to do something about this, and I've got to adopt God's standard, not the world's standard, not, you know, I'm better than this, not comparing I'm better than this person over here, but I'm comparing myself to the holiness of Jesus Christ. And if I fall short of that, I've got work to do.
Yeah.
And God has work to do in my own heart. And so don't lose hope that, oh, this is just the way I am. I think that's the other thing that most guys, and I'm sure you've talked to guys, you and I have talked about this before, many a young men or older men, no matter what it is, they'll come to us and they will almost have they've given up. Mm-hmm. They've tried to stop. They've tried really on their own to stop. And that's another sign that, hey, you're not doing it right. Because to me, what the key of really breaking the cycles of addiction, especially when it comes to lust and pornography, is you have to do it within community. If you try to beat this on your own, I've never known anyone in my entire life that was able to overcome the sin of lust and pornography by themselves.
Yeah.
Ever. Because it requires you to experience the fullness of acceptance and the fullness of you confessing what you're doing, and for them to receive love and presence and no shame. Yep. And that is the only way you break out of the cycle that you're in.
Yep.
So,
yeah, the reality in our culture today is that it seems like we have abandoned any notion that it is even problematic.
Yeah.
Sex sells.
Yeah.
Whether we're talking about, you know, movie stars, musical artists, what they use to sell perfume, whatever it is,
yeah.
You can count on the imagery to be that uses lust as a selling point.
Yes. And this is it is propagated and it is promoted intentionally and aggressively with Hollywood.
Yep.
This make no bones about it. It's not like they're thinking, you know, oh, this just kind of, we just run. No, they, if you know what they're doing, this is why this is such a wicked demonic thing that they are intentionally trying to put it into more shows, more kids shows, more, you know, movies, because they want to wear people down into thinking that something is normal when it's not.
Yeah, I said this several years ago at a conference I was speaking at. I said, if you were sitting in the living room with your family and you were just having a nice conversation, all of a sudden a couple came in and knocked on their door and you let them come into the living room and they lay down on the floor and started stripping each other and started making out and started acting out sexually, that you would put a stop to it. You would
immediately.
You would get up, you'd say, what in the world do you think?
Yes.
My children are in there. I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
You get out of my house. And yet all we got to do is hit the remote and we get it right there and we all look at it as a family.
Yeah.
And so we don't seem to calibrate that. And I'm going to sound really legalistic here, but it's a reality that we've had to deal with because I'm from South Florida. But if somebody walked in their house or walked into the church in their underwear, that you would say, What do you think you're doing? Call right. The police or something going yeah. here. But you throw a little sand on the ground and make and put a pool of water next to it.
I agree.
And they're wearing less than most people wear for
yes,
underwear.
Yes.
And somehow it's okay.
Yeah.
And expecting that somehow that there's not going. And, you know, I'm not suggesting everybody has to go out and buy a burkini or whatever they call those things.
But I don't even know.
But I think we've overreacted to the concept of modesty
yeah.
to the point
yeah.
where we don't even make an effort. It's become socially acceptable.
Yes. And this is where, again, we have got to get this under control in our own homes and with our own children and help teach them the standards. And listen, if you are a dad and a mom, you understand that if you let your kids dictate what the standards are in your home for dress, you are in for a world of hurt. Yep.
I'm of this opinion. If you have not had an argument with your teenage daughter about what she's wearing outside of your house, you're probably not a good parent.
I completely agree.
Assuming you have daughters.
Well, assuming you have daughters, yeah. I can tell you that at the Burrell house, we had some knockdown drag outs.
Absolutely. There were times I was like, you're not wearing that. What's wrong with it? I'm like, you're not wearing, I don't have to explain what's wrong with it. You're just not wearing that. I don't, you know, so.
My favorite was I tried to be the reasonable dad. And so I said, we're going to go shopping for the afternoon. We're going to go to lunch. We're going to go shopping. I'll buy you all kinds of new outfits or whatever. We came back with nothing. And nobody was speaking to each other. It was not a good day.
Full disclosure, let your imagination fill in the blanks.
Full disclosure, I would hate to go clothes shopping. No.
Well, apparently that is not unshared by others.
but I think that what we're saying is there are so many layers to this problem. Part of it is people's standards of what they think is fashionable, what they think is okay. And again, it seeps into the church. I mean, you and I always... There are times where, like, man, there should be a standard of modesty for just life in general. But even for people that walk into the church, sometimes you're like, really, you want to wear that to draw attention to yourself as opposed to, you know, that's what's going on. And I think one of the things that we've got to do is we got to do a better job of teaching modesty, teaching holiness, having the standard. But you've got to get to the point where. Men, and again, I'm just speaking from a male perspective because men primarily deal with this issue. And that is, you've got to get to the point, every guy needs to be able to have this conversation with another guy about how they're doing in this area. Yep. I think that is key. If you're saying, and there are guys, I'm not saying that every guy struggles with this, but I would say from my experience, the majority of men struggle with this area way more than women do. But if you don't have another guy to talk to, if you have another, I hate the whole accountability partner, but there has to be an open, honest conversation about your own pursuit of holiness, the whole lust thing is going to be a part of that. Yeah.
So that's interesting. When you say that I kind of hate the whole accountability partner thing, I think I kind of know what you mean by that. Yeah. But can you differentiate between what is kind of the accountability version versus
the good accountability,
the good,
bad accountability.
The good version.
All right. So I like, and I can't remember what person, I heard this from another author. So this is not original to me. Okay. But it needs to be bad accountability partner is police officer. I saw you speeding. Did you speed this week? You know what I mean? It's kind of like really rough making. It's very legalistic, you know? And that's no fun for anyone because it feels very accusatory, feels very harsh, feels very rule-driven. Mm. You don't want accountability that's police officer. You want accountability that's heart surgeon. You know, a heart doctor, someone is like, how's your heart doing? Mm. Right? That's going to walk with you about, you know, okay, let's try to do some things to help your heart, you know, as opposed to the police officer that's ready to write tickets. I've known of guys that, like, I'll be your accountability partner. Like, I'm not telling you anything, buddy. You know what I mean? Because they will use shame and guilt to try to influence you. And unfortunately, there's a lot of guys that have experienced that.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to open up and they don't want to share. And they've had bad experiences of trying to open up.
That's a really good point.
But there are people out there that will love you and that will see you and still, and I think that's one of the things about what lust does. Lust makes us cover up and hide because of the shame. I've never met anyone that struggles with this that doesn't feel an immense amount of shame. And the moment they end up talking about this and opening up about this, it's almost like this relief of, you've seen me, you really know me. And I think for a lot of people that struggle with this, what they're longing for until they really address this issue in their life, they will always struggle with the aspect of being accepted by others. Hmm. Always. Because deep down inside of them, the reason why they are constantly needing people's approval and constantly needing people to tell them who they are is because if what they're really saying is, if you really knew who I was, you wouldn't accept me. Hmm. And so they have to continually seek that approval from people.
All right. Clarification question, because I have to ask the contrarian questions, but I like drawing the clarity out of you. So what should Christians do about art? Because there's a lot of nudity in art and there's a lot of really good art that it seems like it would be bad for Christians to just not see most art anymore, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So how do you recommend people balance
that? That's a really good question.
Or is that another episode? There,
it is another episode, perhaps, because, but remember this, in a landmark decision by the Supreme Court years ago, and I cannot for life remember which
Justice
Supreme Court.
Potter.
Was it Potter?
Yeah.
That says, I cannot define pornography, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this comes down to a lot of issues in Christian liberty.
That's a great point.
We know the impact that it has on us. Mm-hmm. We know.
Yeah.
I you know, looking at the statue, David, okay, that, I mean, that's an amazing, you know, artistic.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of Middle Age art is that way.
Yeah.
But I don't, most of us are not talking about that. We're talking about something far, far worse.
Sure.
And I think whether we're creating it or whether we're observing it or whether, you know, we're seeking it or whatever, we have to ask ourselves, what is the intent of our heart?
Yes.
And what's the intent of the artist? Was seduction the intent of the artist as well?
Too.
Because, I think there are definitely layers to this, mm-hmm. right? So, because again, going back to, this isn't just about nudity. Because there are people that wear clothes that are trying to draw attention to their mm-hmm. body.
Yeah.
So I want to explore that because we only have about 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
And I don't want us to skip over this because it's such a difficult and delicate topic. But do we not need to have more conversations in our homes, in our churches, even in the public discourse about the responsibility we have to present ourselves to others in a way that doesn't cause them to sin? We're talking about lust, and I think that's an important one. But it could also be in how we touch each other. It could be on whether we're angry with each other, mm-hmm. what kind of interaction we have with each other that does it provoke mm-hmm. An unbiblical, inappropriate response.
Yes.
And today in our hyper-egalitarian mentality in this culture where we don't like to admit that there are fundamental differences between mm-hmm. how men view the world and women view the mm-hmm. world, which I think mm-hmm. is balderdash.
Yeah.
But the reality is women are very attractive to normal heterosexual men.
Mm-hmm.
And does that not come with the responsibility for every man to be aware of his worst potential, but also for women to be aware that men have this potential?
Right.
And it is not the equivalent of women being attracted to men. Different things about men may attract
right.
women.
Yeah.
And men have a responsibility
right.
not to interact or engage with a woman in a way that would create lust or send the wrong inappropriate
correct.
Signal
yeah,
there.
Yeah, because what we're dealing with is covet. At the heart is covetousness. I want something that I do
that
not
isn't
have.
Mine to
that's
have.
Not mine to have, right? And so whether that is emotion or whether it is the physical body, it, at the heart of it is I want something that God has not given to me, mm-hmm. right? And so, there are two parts to play of someone saying, I have the self-control enough to be able to not look at the temptation, okay? But there's also a part to play as a Christian, especially, I mean, we can't control people outside that are not Christians, but as a believer, we should be able to say, I need to hold myself, control myself, whether it's how I dress or how I act in a way that's not going to elicit attention that I'm trying to get from people to, you know what I'm saying? So there is a, and whether that's male or female, I think both can violate that at various levels, whether it is emotion or physical. Yeah, I think you hit on something that is really important. And both are the responsibility of the Christian to say, I'm not going to play that game.
Yeah.
I'm going to be satisfied, not just in God, but I'm going to be satisfied with the sexual boundaries that God has given to me.
Right.
And whether that's in my singleness or whether that's in my marriage, there will always be sexual boundaries that we have that God has given to us. And are we so filled with Christ and pleasure with him that we don't need anything else? And that's ultimately where we want to get. And I know that when I say that, I can think back to the way I used to think. I can think back to when I used to struggle. And I think back to guys I have conversations with now, and they're kind of like, dude, you're crazy. I can't imagine getting to that place. But that's a real place where you can get to by the grace of God and the power of God. It can be a reality for you. This does not have to be, lust does not have to be a sin that you're saying, well, I'm just going to have to manage this like termites in my house. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no, this is, holiness is possible through Christ. I think it's important.
If you want to beat the termite thing to death, I mean, we had a termite issue one time at our new house, yeah. and they came, like, when we bought the house, they're like, this is the one issue you need to know about.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, look, you have two options. You can do the cheap, like, little temporary thing, and we're going to have to keep on coming back. Uh-huh. Or you can spend, like, I forget what it was, you know, $1,000 or whatever for this, like, very permanent, like, we're going to go all in. So if you need to deal with this,
yes.
maybe you need to go all in and not just go kind of halvesies.
Maybe we should talk about that next episode. How do you go all in against lust? Hmm. Does that sound good?
Cool.
All right.
So you just made an executive decision that we're going to have part B.
Why not?
Right here in the middle of an episode of Life Talks. All right. So, well, folks, thanks for dropping in on our conversation, listening to us today. And we will continue this conversation about the socially acceptable sin of lust on our next episode. But as always, we welcome your feedback. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, please let us know. You can contact us at lifetalks@lifecharlotte.com. Until next time, thanks as always for joining us here at Life Talks.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.